Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought two wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
To be lockstep in with her recent album redos, I feel like we should just rename this year 2023, Taylor's version. Whether on tour, on the radio, or even on your television during NFL football games, Taylor Swift has dominated everywhere, including the box office. That's where Taylor Swift The Eras Tour, since its release in October, has become the highest grossing concert film in history.
She's amazing. I mean, honestly, as a mother, to see this one young lady captivate almost 70,000 people for over 3 hours and 15 minutes, I mean, it's amazing.
And not to be outdone before the end of the year, Renaissance, a film by Beyoncé, dropped just last weekend and quickly notched its own historic opening.
I actually took off work today because I was like, today is Beyoncé Day, so prepare the others and I'll be at the movie theater.
I'm Jim Hankey, and on today's show, I'm speaking with Chicago Tribune film critic Michael Phillips about what the future of the concert film means to those still waiting to pay for a stadium seat in person, as well as those more comfortable on the couch. Let's get looped in, Chicago. As if Taylor Swift's Eras Tour concert film hadn't made headlines already, as of this recording racking up over $175 million to make it the 11th highest grossing film of the year, surprise news came a few weeks ago that the nearly three-hour presentation is now headed to streaming on Taylor's birthday, no less, December 13th, making the Eras Tour rentable on platforms like Amazon, Apple TV, and more. Meanwhile, 32-time Grammy winner Beyoncé just came out with Renaissance last weekend. Similar in its concert film experience to Taylor's movie, but providing more narration and behind-the-scenes footage, it garnered the most revenue in two decades for a movie released in December. So what's different about these two films when you hold them up to the rest of what Hollywood had to offer in 2023? Well, beyond bringing fans to the edge of their seats with a full concert experience, on a business level, these were unprecedented releases. See, Taylor and Beyoncé didn't partner with a major studio to get these movies made, let alone into theaters. Their clout is large enough where they simply reached a deal with theaters directly through the largest chain in the world, AMC, to get them shown. In an age where we're still trying to figure out what the worth of a movie theater is post-pandemic, this is a landmark move, showing that if you're a large enough star, you can bypass a whole segment of the Hollywood movie-making machine altogether. For more on the historic way these movies are being shown, and more on the year in film as a whole, I reached out to Chicago Tribune film critic Michael Phillips. I'm not sure if you'd agree, but I feel like the film industry is in the middle of some experimentation still, where like Eras, like what we'll talk about in a little bit, hey, this is in theaters, but oh, surprise, now it's going to be on streaming. Or some of the production houses, they'll put something to streaming, but oh, it's going to do a week in theaters too. Do you think this is still sort of a new normal, or do you think we're still toying with things in this kind of post-pandemic cinema world?
William Goldman, the Oscar-winning screenwriter, wrote Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid and All the President's Men, you know, wrote a great book about Hollywood and many other books. But, you know, his three-word Hollywood in a nutshell stands today more than ever. Nobody knows anything. I think what that means for today's movie world is these conglomerates being formed. They don't really know how to plan for anything. They don't know what the pandemic's up to. They don't really know coming out of the strike finally settled. You know, they don't really know how quickly they can look at the money they used to make at movie theaters as something that is enticing enough for them to return to. I tell you, my beef is with the studios, and especially complete disregard for the movie theater operators in this country. They've totally thrown in the towel, and I don't get it. Coming off the, I admit, completely unique phenomena of Barbenheimer this summer, where you have a movie based on a toy that didn't look particularly good on paper, even with Greta Gerwig involved. And Oppenheimer, Christopher Nolan's film, which, look, I was eager to see both of them, but you just don't expect them to turn into what combined Barbenheimer made, $2.5 billion in theaters around the world. It's not really time to throw in the towel on theatrical yet. And I don't think studios and streamers have even learned the right lessons from the success of Barbenheimer. Now, which you cannot repeat. That's the main thing, that you have to manage expectations with that, because this weird ad hoc marketing coup of the word Barbenheimer and somehow getting everybody excited about going back to the movies this summer in between variants was kind of a low point for COVID. To me, that was a real, obviously it was a shot on the arm for theaters to just get people back and excited. And those films were real movies and they had real appeal, and people just wanted to see them, and then they wanted to see them again. But to your question, nobody can feel secure about any financial plan in the future. But I'm always concerned when you have a hit like Barbie, $1.4 billion, and it is a gnat on the elephant of debt that David Zaslav and Warner Brothers Discovery are dealing with right now, and they're cutting costs everywhere they can to get rid of it. And so if you got a $1 billion hit and that doesn't really mean much for your bottom line, then something is wrong with the system.
Well, before we get into the Eras Tour film and Renaissance, two films I wanted to reach out to you to talk about, what makes a great concert film to you personally as a movie critic?
Man, that changes depending on the music and the talent and especially who's behind the camera. Sometimes the talent on the stage is more than enough. If you go back to some of the early seminal concert films like The Tammy Show from the 1960s, Jazz on a Summer's Day, a Newport Jazz Festival film from, I believe, late 59, 1960. Not sure about the date, but those aren't particularly flashy or interesting cinematic achievements. Doesn't matter. I mean, now with James Brown doing the most insane dance moves pre-Prince, in the Tammy Show, then there are exceptions. Martin Scorsese's The Last Waltz, the one that just, made more money in this 4K digital revival in theaters than it did the first time. Stop Making Sense, the Talking Heads film. I just couldn't believe how good that felt, looked, sounded, and made me feel all these years later. Now, let's take a look at the films that really made a difference this year in terms of the concert film map. Okay, you got Taylor Swift's film, The Eras Tour, almost $250 million worldwide. That's almost the entire concert. That's kind of the new format, very different from Stop Making Sense, about twice as long as Stop Making Sense. And it's most everything, not all, most of what a concert goer would have heard in the Taylor Swift tour live. How interesting is it visually? It's okay. It's good enough for the fans. And I think a lot of her songs are actually hold up great visually, just because the concert was such a huge production. Beyonce's film, the Renaissance film, that's a different achievement because there's an awful lot of backstage work, a lot of kind of here's how I made it, first person narration going on, an awful lot of glimpses, carefully managed and monitored. It's not like anything in this film is going to put anything like a single dent in Beyonce's image and self-image as she wants to present it. But the visual production of that concert live must have been staggering. I actually really, really wish I'd seen it. And I just like Beyonce's music a lot. That's another one where, you're talking about almost a three-hour movie, and that's what people wanted from both the Taylor Swift and the Beyonce films, and they got it. A nearly complete representation of the live show, and in the case of Beyonce's film, the best visual ideas in that really lifted up. Of the two big ones this year, It's the one I was really happy to have seen.
Well, you brought up, you know, I kind of wanted to be there. Now, in retrospect, as we see concert tickets rise, is that a major question, I guess, going forward in, you know, having the ability, gosh, am I going to wait for them to put this into a theater? Am I going to wait for this to stream at home? Or am I going to go see this real flesh and blood concert? It's a real question, I think, going forward.
Of the metrics I would like to see coming off the success of both Taylor Swift's and Beyonce's concert films, I'd like to know the percentage of people that saw those shows live, because I think ideally you're appealing to both major audience segments in these films. The folks that saw it live, didn't pay their rent that month in order to afford the tickets, and are very happy to revisit it at a fraction of the price. And then there's the rest of us who didn't see him live, are just as much of a sucker for spectacle as anybody. And if you like the music, you know, and in my case, I paid $33 to see the Beyonce film in IMAX at the Regal in my neighborhood. You know, not a cheap movie ticket as movie tickets go. But, you know, I think these films actually appeal to both segments pretty widely. And there's some other financial matters that are going to end up really changing the industry with this. Beyonce and Taylor Swift both cut deals with, not with the studio, not with Warner Brothers, not with Paramount, not with anybody, except AMC theaters. Boom. Not just the middleman, but the entire film industry as we know it, cut out of the deal. You know, streamlining the profits for the artists showcased by these movies. And if I were Hollywood, I would be nervous about that trend, because I don't know how well it'll work for anything other than a marquee name concert film, but man, it sure worked twice in 2 months for these two.
Yeah, that's the amazing thing, is that it would take someone of their caliber to be able to continue to push that. I'm thinking, I got to see Ed Sheeran this summer at Soldier Field. Yeah. It's like that kind of level of like production, then funneling that directly to fans in some way and plugging that into theaters. It's really amazing. I think there is some crossover. Certainly, I like a lot of Taylor Swift's music. I like a lot of Beyonce's music. So there's that Venn diagram. But what is the projection on the Beyonce film? Obviously, we've seen what the Eras Tour film has done in theaters. We don't know what it's going to continue to do on streaming, obviously. But in the industry, what's the projection for this Beyonce film, do you think?
Well, I can tell you what the Monday morning quarterbacking is telling us today, right? That it's the best December debut in 20 years, not since Tom Cruise made The Last Samurai in 2003. Who even remembers that film? You know, has a movie made $21 million over the weekend. Now, unlike the Taylor Swift film, the Beyonce film is actually a critical success too. You know, I liked it a lot, and God knows I wasn't alone. I just happened to be the oldest white guy who liked it a lot. But that's, you know, that's neither here nor there. I think, you know, Beyonce's a legit triple threat in every which way, no matter how much help she may have had as director behind the camera on this. But, you know, this film has got her all over it in every way. But that's looking very good. I mean, what does it have to do to beat the Taylor Swift film at the box office? If you want to play that game, it just has to make $150 million domestic, or about $249 million worldwide. Will it get there? I don't know. But you know what? It's already a profit machine, you know, based on the first weekend. So we'll see how it holds up the second.
We've got more with Michael Phillips from the Chicago Tribune after the break.
The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies Rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
You mentioned the Talking Heads concert film as well earlier. That was rejuvenated in 4K. I think that was a big selling point for a lot of people checking that out who obviously were big fans, but maybe even some of the younger generation who had not seen that before. And it was obviously faithfully, you know, restored and looked great, sounded great. Is that what needs to happen for, you know, these 40, 50 year old concert films to come back? We have the technology now to revamp this, to tweak it in a way that will get people out to the theaters. What did you feel the technology did for somebody who had been a fan of that film like you had been for so long?
Yeah, so I went in a fan, right? Which is interesting because when I was 23 and I saw that film for the first time back in the 80s, I knew one or two or maybe three of the Talking Heads songs. I was a Talking Head newbie completely. And then to kind of fall in love with the music and the visual sort of approach to filming the music and editing it and cutting just the right moments and all of it. I mean, that was like a really big experience for me. Now, that film was not a cultural phenomenon when it came out. It made a little money. That's about it. And I guess compared to Taylor Swift and the Beyonce films, Talking Heads revival in 4K digital, crispy sound, just great, great looking image, all of it. It's nothing compared to what they made, but it never was going to be. That's what the Talking Heads were. They were just kind of an odd pop art or art pop band with kind of fascinating musical influences, David Byrne's tastes all over the place, that happened to go mainstream, not in a superstar way, but in a star way, let's say. Very different with Taylor Swift and Beyonce. These are like mega superstars. So that's a different thing. I don't think anybody showed up in a big suit to see the, you know, the Talking Heads Stop Making Sense revival in theaters. But man, I saw an awful lot of costumes, especially at the Beyonce screening I went to the night before official opening. So, you know, different scale. In the existing library of concert films, we don't have that many that are anywhere near as good as Stop Making Sense and are absolutely waiting for a kind of a restored version, maybe in 4K digital with kind of remastered sound, all of it. It's not really an endless list. But the thing you really have to look at, I think, is the success already this year of Taylor Swift and Beyonce and how the fact that they cut out the studios completely and just did the deal with the theaters, AMC theaters, that could be something that becomes more and more interesting to more and more different kinds of films and artists, possibly. So we'll see.
Well, and we don't have to spend a ton of time on it, but you mentioned The Last Waltz. I mean, it's one of my favorite movies for sure. Robbie Robertson passed this year. And I also saw Killers of the Flower Moon. I thought that was amazing, too. If Killers is Scorsese's last film, I feel he put a great pin on an incredible career. But I can't help but think in Martin Scorsese's shoes, looking at what Stop Making Sense did, maybe not even money-wise, but culturally this year, could we see a 4K redo of The Last Waltz, I think? And you've certainly got people like Neil Young in that movie and what have you, where like people are still, even younger generations, very much clamoring for seeing that sort of stuff.
Yes, I agree. I could absolutely see Scorsese, you know, saying, all right, maybe I'm done with $200 million features. I may have come to the end of the part of my career where Apple TV or somebody will give me one-fifth of $1 billion to make The Irishman. You know, same thing for Killers of the Flower Moon. Both films, especially Flower Moon, I really like. And Flower Moon's in my top five for the year. But he's been hanging with musicians forever. He's been around music. Music, the needle drops in his movies are famously influential and effective and have become a cliche in many ways.
Yes,
because so many people have copied them. And a lot of people think that The Last Waltz actually is the one. For me, it's one of the ones. But, you know, there's others I haven't seen and I'm still, or I haven't seen in too long. So I'm always hesitant to say this is the best one.
Sure.
Because, you know, we change as we age. And if we haven't seen it for 10, 20 more years, it's time for another look.
Absolutely. We're close to wrapping up, but looking through an article of the most anticipated movies of 2024 on RottenTomatoes.com this week, I took the time to count them up, and there's 36 films listed in that article. And I think maybe literally one or two are a brand new story and not a sequel, not a prequel, not an adaptation of a TV show or a Broadway musical. And I think one of the things we keep hearing from moviegoers is that they're sick of that. And, you know, please give us original ideas. We don't want rehashes. But what did the numbers say? I mean, looking at something like that, it's pretty clear that studios are betting on people paying for a movie theater seat based on nostalgia.
Every project you saw on that list was probably greenlit just before the pandemic or just after.
Sure.
And there wasn't much to challenge the supremacy then of Marvel Cinematic Universe titles. Now, we're already at number 33 there. But if and look, money doesn't, you know, I'm a little interested in money as part of my job. Not really. In the end, if I look at the stuff this last year, 2023, that I just was somewhere between, who cares, and ugh, I've had it. Every one of them has a Roman numeral after the title. Indiana Jones 5, don't care about it. I know it was a hit. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, hated it. Hated it. And other people liked it. That's fine. That's fine. You know, it's a free country. They have the right to be wrong. Fast and Furious 10, the people who made it don't like it probably. You know, the Quantumania, oh my Lord, I feel like I'm still in the quantum realm in that film. Like, I feel that film is still going on. It feels, I just left it at the 3-hour mark, whatever. But that's a lot of Roman numerals, you know what I mean? And then I also get the sinking feeling jumping off the weird success of Barbie, the fact that it was a toy company franchising them. Hey, great, we're gonna license every one of our toys for the movies. And we'll start with Barbie and see how it goes. Okay, well, we'll accidentally give it to a really interesting writer-director, says the studio, and Mattel signs off on it. And then Greta Gerwig makes one of the best films of the year, it turns out. Well, then you see the list of the films that are already in pre-production for them, and you start to get that sinking feeling. Maybe the Hot Wheels film is going to be good. I loved Hot Wheels when I was 8. But then you go through the whole list and you really think, okay, by Mattel movie 5 or 6, what are we going to feel like? Like they're just going back to the same IP well. Now, hopefully we get any of those films turns out half as good as Barbie. It'll be a miracle.
Well, Michael, thank you for sharing your expertise with us this week. I really appreciate it. And we'll see you at the movie soon.
I appreciate it, Jim. Thanks for having me on.
This episode of Looped In Chicago was hosted, produced, and edited by me, Jim Hankey. WBBM's news director is Craig Schwalb, and our managing producer of national news podcasts is Myron Kaplan. We are now on TikTok. You can find us there at WBBM News Radio 105.9. And for all other social media, a quick and easy guide on where to find us is located at WBBMNewsRadio.com/follow. Thanks for listening, and we'll keep you looped in again right here next week. See you soon.
Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.